Thank you, Fetcher, for taking us around the world in 2 minutes. Lagos, I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. This campaign season, Lagos will be remembered for its opinion polls. We've seen data become so much more important to Nigerians and our political conversation. We've also seen so many innovations in polling as each pollster uses its own methodology. What does SBM's poll say? What does SBM's poll say? Here's today's big hard fact. The SBM EIE poll sampled the opinions of 11,534 respondents nationwide. That's a huge sample size. And this particular poll goes beyond just predicting how each presidential candidate will do. It looks at issues like vote buying, worries about violence, confidence in INEC, and so much more. And SBM Intelligence is joining me today to walk us through the poll results. My guest is head of research at SBM Intelligence, Ikemesit Efiong. He's not here yet. I'm trying to figure out why. We're hoping that he will join us before the conversation goes a bit far. But Lagos, I would love to get your questions about the nature, methodology and results of the SBM poll. Hopefully, Ikemesit is able to join us and we can start talking. So we're going to talk about some of the things that this poll was designed to find out. It was designed to find out more than just which candidate is in the lead, you know. So he's going to talk to us about some of their objectives, some of the objectives of this poll. And then we'll talk about the poll size. 11,534. That's a massive poll size, right? So I'm very curious, first of all, about how they arrived at that number. So we'll start there. How did they arrive at that number? And then we'll move from there to, you know, the respondents, the survey that asked the respondents what were some of the questions, because I saw the report myself, and in my opinion, the questions were very comprehensive, right? So when our guest from SBM joins us, he will talk to us, he will walk us through some of those questions that they asked their respondents and why they chose those questions specifically. And then we'll dig into the data, right? We'll start with the presidential election. So they had four questions to make their projections at SBM. Who the preferred candidate of the person they were interviewing, so the respondents to their survey, the respondents to their poll, who the preferred candidate was, if they were going to vote their preferred candidate, if they would vote for the same party in all elections, who they thought would win the presidency. These are some of the things that they asked those who took their survey, those 11,000 people who took their survey. So I have questions about that. I also have questions about the survey results, because the headline of the survey results from SBM is that Atiku Abubakar and Peter Obi are getting 25% of votes in two-thirds of the states. So Atiku gets 27, Obi gets 25. You also have Obi winning most states with 17, right? According to the poll from SBM, they asked 11,000 people, and I have questions about that, because you have a party that wasn't in a conversation a year ago, and at the time most Nigerians were asked to predict the two parties that will lead the poll. If most Nigerians were asked at that time, they would have either said APC or PDP, you know. So I'm curious what this data tells SBM about Obi's emergence, right? And then also, based on SBM's data, only Atiku and Obi can win in the first round, but SBM is projecting that Tinubu can force a runoff, because even without getting 25% in 24 states, he can get more votes than the other two candidates. And I want to know, you know, what their thinking is when they're talking about that. So they're going to walk us through that as well. Hopefully he's able to join the show. I'm not sure what's going on, so I'm going to take a quick break and find out what's happening with my guest, and you know, hopefully get them to join the show. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. You're listening to Hard Facts. Don't go away.
This is The Voice Note on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
This continent is continent of young people. Half of our people here are below 20 years old. Yes? Look at the average age of our presidents. It's about 63, 64 years old. We are the only continent in the world where we have presidents at 90 years old starting new terms. I mean, you guys are crazy or what? We've seen people in wheelchairs, you know, unable to raise hands to standing for elections. This is a joke. Yes, you are right to laugh because the whole world is laughing at us. I always say, I mean, you look around you. You look, United States, an economy of $15-16 trillion. We, all of Africa, are less than $1 trillion. This is a $15-16 trillion economy, right? The most important country in the world, like it or not. Obama, who's happy to be half African anyway, become president when he's 46, 47 years old. He's president. If Obama was in Kenya, what he will be doing now? He will be driving a bus maybe. Yeah? Really? And he's not the youngest president. Clinton was younger than him. Clinton became president at 46 years old. Kennedy was 40 years old, 40 odd subsequent years old, and he became president. Why these big countries, much bigger than us, entrust their economies, their nuclear weapons, their oil resources to people who are in their 40s? And we only pick up people at 90 years old to lead us. To lead us where? To the grave?
Making a mistake does not make you special. Everybody makes a mistake. What makes you special is how and if you get up. They said, Carla, why don't you talk about the pearls that you would have given to your 25-year-old self after being a woman on Wall Street for 30 years. So here's how it goes. Dear Carla, the first thing that I'd like to tell you is own your power. When people are starting to question whether or not you can, and you start to doubt whether or not you can, red flag, you have just given away your power. The next thing I'd like to tell you, Carla, is you must be comfortable taking risks. If you never reach far enough to hit that wall, you won't know how far you can go. What's the worst that can happen if you take a risk and it doesn't work out? So you fail. But guess what? Failure always brings you a gift, and that gift is called experience. The third piece of advice, Carla, is remember that it is easier to beg for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. The fourth piece of advice, and Carla, this is a big one. If you meet somebody, a guy or a gal, that you are interested in, and they tell you that you are too much for them, they are right. Do not dim your light for somebody else's convenience. The fifth piece of advice, Carla, is you must celebrate your victories often. There'll be lots of things that will happen in life that might make you sad, that might make you pause. So when the great things happen, no matter how small, celebrate. When it's your birthday, celebrate all month. My next piece of advice, Carla, don't worry about making mistakes. And oh, by the way, making a mistake, Carla, does not make you special. Everybody makes a mistake. What makes you special is how and if you get up. The next piece of advice, life is a journey. Don't be in such a hurry to go towards things. Enjoy every single lesson that life brings you. And then finally, I say to you, as my good friend Judith Adu said to me, this is real life. This ain't no dress rehearsal. So make sure that you go for it all of the time. put your foot on the gas, no matter what it is, and go for it. You have absolutely nothing to lose. If you are stuck and you're not sure whether or not you should try something, always default to the try. You already are clear about what no looks like, so why wouldn't you play for yes? And as I close, I say to you, Carla, when you empower other people, you magnify and amplify your impact. You have all the goods that you need in order to maximize your success. Sincerely, Carla.
Welcome back to Hard Facts with Sandra Ezekwesili.
I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Apologies about that long wait. We finally have our guest joining us virtually. He is the head of research at SBM Intelligence, Ikemeside Fiong. Good to have you on the show. Good evening.
Hi, Sandra. Good evening. And apologies for the long trek on the call.
Yes, good evening. So I said at the start of the show that the SBM poll was designed to find out more than just which candidate is in the lead. What were some of the objectives for this poll by SBM?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. What we wanted to achieve with this study was to understand two broad themes. One, we wanted to understand what the issues of importance to Nigerians that has been driving this election cycle are. And the second bit was that we wanted to also get a sense of the views of Nigerians around important aspects of, you know, of election management and how election day will play out. So the questions that we asked centered on the views of voters with respect to the economy, with respect to insecurity, and some of those broad top line issues. We also asked about how important voters thought that vote buying would be in this cycle, whether religion and ethnicity would be a significant factor that would influence their voter choice, what they thought of INEC and its capacity to deliver a free, fair, and credible voting experience, and also what they thought about the bimodal voter accreditation system, or BVAS, you know, how it worked, what their understanding of, you know, what the fallback mechanisms are if the BVAS device, say at the polling unit, didn't perform as designed. And I suppose finally, we also asked questions around their views on the, you know, the Electoral Act, which was passed just last year. They understood key themes around the Electoral Act, and even thought that the new electoral law was not only an improvement on the previous law, but if it was going to enhance the, you know, the broad voting experience. Right, come this weekend. So those were some of the issues that we tried to tackle and address, right, by putting together this study.
I started the show by talking about your poll size. You ended up with a sample size of 11,534. How did you arrive at that number?
So we used what was called a weighted measurement mechanism. So we looked at, the overall voting pool, right, with respect to permanent voter card collections. INEC has reported those numbers state by state. So we basically computed all of those numbers, broke it down by geopolitical zones. So we had a top line figure for all of the six geopolitical zones. And then, we basically weighted the calculation of our sample size to account for the size of the various voting blocks right across the country. So that's how, you know, we ended at the, 11,000 plus number. We wanted to make this sample as representative as possible, because we understand that you would think that logically on the face of it, you would want an equal amount of respondents right across the country. But that's not how voter registrations have panned out. That's not how PVC collections, right, have panned out. And so we wanted a poll which closely mirrored the actual facts on the ground and as they would be on election day, right? So the polling size was weighted to account for the, you know, the various regional differences, right, in the potential vote.
So 11,500 people agreed to take the survey. How many others refused?
So we had a drop-off rate, I think, of about, I think it was about 15%. So that means that the total number of people that we actually tried to question was probably closer to the 13,000 mark. And that's why if you look at the reports and you look at sort of the demographic breakdown, it would appear as though certain constituencies were apparently oversampled. So you think male respondents, for example, or Christian respondents, and that's because you know, it's one thing to do the calculations, right, sitting in your cushy and comfortable office here in Lagos. It's actually quite another thing to get people to respond. This is not the first poll that SBM Intelligence has done in this cycle. We've been testing voter attitudes on a range and a number of issues from right after the end of the presidential primaries for all of the various political parties. And what we found is that it has become progressively more difficult to actually get Nigerians, and especially Nigerians that have PVCs and so are likely voters, to respond to our survey enumerators. It was our experience that in certain parts of the country, there were certain demographics which were less likely to be responsive to enumerators. And that's why, you know, the sample size and some of the demographic breakdown in the end was sort of the way it was.
So your report says that you selected, because I want us to talk about this 11,000 respondents, you know, let's talk about the breakdown of those 11,000 respondents. Your report says you selected them in such a way that there are enough respondents from each state and each demographic group to accurately model them. Tell us about that. Tell us how that works.
Yes, and so the thing with polling, right, as a scientific endeavor, is that there's a fine line that you have to walk, right, in order for you to acquire information that would generally be seen as statistically representative. So you don't want your polling sample to be too small that you basically just talked to a given class of people within, you know, a certain neighborhood. You also don't want it to be too large that it is unwieldy and you're not able to carry out definitive analysis, right? And so what we tried to do, and some of the fail-safes, right, included, you know, for example, we had multiple enumerators in each state, right? So that we had enumerators that were solely focused on, you know, urban respondents or semi-urban respondents, as well as rural, right, respondents, so that you don't have a situation where you're sitting down in a state capital and then you're collating responses and you want to make that representative of the entire state. We know that the dynamics are somewhat different for rural Nigeria as they are for more urban parts of this country. We carefully calibrated what the statistically representative size for each demographic across gender, across age, across religion and ethnic preferences would be. And we had enumerators that were solely focused on meeting those targets for each of those demographics. So we didn't have enumerators working across demographic divides, as it were, so that it was easy for us, right, on the research and the analysis team to clearly and accurately know which demographics were meeting their targets. I mean, this sort of painstaking work meant added to sort of the timeline for execution of it, and why the report has eventually come out this close to the voting exercise. Because as we all know, right, this election has seen the rise of polling and election questionnaires, right, as a real tool and as a real force for helping voters, the media, the general public, as well as the practitioners, the politicians themselves on the ground, to really understand what the mood of the country is like. And so we knew that this report was going to be clearly watched. It was eagerly anticipated, right? Certainly in certain circles. And so we wanted to be sure that each aspect of the demographic pile was adequately represented, and so that, you know, so that we're able to give as accurate a picture as we can get. And for, you know, many people who have said, well, 11,000 is small, there are 93.1 million voters, we did not seek to replicate the election. We were not on a mission to test and speak to every voter, as it were. It's why it's a poll. It's literally a cut and a slice of the pie, right? The most important thing is to ensure that, like, every, you know, properly done dish, all of the necessary ingredients, right, exist in that pile, so that it's able to give us an accurate, as accurate a picture as we can get of where the Nigerian electorate is.
And your survey asked respondents a very comprehensive list of questions. Walk us through what you asked them and why you chose those questions specifically.
Okay, so I think I'll take the second question first, then I'll dive into some details, some of the questions that we asked. So why we wanted to do this is that there's been a lot of commentary, especially, you know, sort of in the online digital media as well as social media space, that's been trying to style this election as Nigeria's sort of first post-modern elections, where, you know, all of the bread and butter drivers, right, that typically animate election cycles traditionally in Nigeria weren't at play. So political patronage gone out the window, ethnic and religious affiliations largely dealt with and dispensed with, right? And so we really wanted to test that. We really wanted to find out, right, from the people who are going to be making these decisions as best as we can right across the country, if this was actually an accurate and a reasonable proposition, right? And so we asked questions specifically tied to the issues. A lot of the previous calls have sort of been focused on leading the horse race, who's up, who's down, who's doing well and who isn't. But for us, we felt it was a more interesting proposition to actually understand the voter himself, because the voter in the end is at the center of the democratic exercise and is the core component of any attempt at achieving representative democracy. So we asked questions. We asked, you know, some pretty difficult questions. We asked, for example, just to isolate one example, on vote buying, we asked respondents if they've ever been offered money to sell their votes. About 3 in 10 Nigerians said they have in the past. We asked, right, you know, what if, you know, so for those who have been offered monies for their votes, we asked how much in the past, right? Mm. And they've been offered. And we have an average, I think for most Nigerian voters, it's anything between 1 to 5,000 naira. We even went as far, but we didn't include this in the report because we didn't want malign elements to use this as a vote buying planning tool. But we do have a supplement where we actually ask voters how much how much money they would like to be offered in this cycle that will sort of change and flip their voting decision. Mm-hmm. We actually have that number. We just didn't put it in the report, right? And it was quite interesting how open and honest, right, and Nigerians were. And, you know, one of the things that we vote buying, while certainly a national phenomenon, right, has high regional correlations, right? So we know, for example, that votes are more expensive in very competitive states.
Okay, we'll come back to that point. We'll come back to that point about votes being more expensive in more competitive states. But we have to take a break right now. Lagos, when we return from this break, we'll go back to SBM's poll. What does SBM's poll say? I told you that they sampled the opinions of 11,534 respondents nationwide to find out what people thought about a number of things. And he's just told us what those things are. By he, I mean the head of research at SBM Intelligence, Ikemesit Effiong. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. This is Nigeria Info. Don't go away.
Welcome back to your number one talk news and sports station. This is Nigeria Info.
I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. We've got 5 days to the presidential elections. What does SBM's poll say? I said when we started the show today that this campaign season will be remembered for its opinion polls. We have seen data become so much more important to Nigerians, to our political conversations. We've seen so many innovations in polling, each pollster using its own methodology, and it's all been really, really good for me, at least, who's a lover of facts. The SBM EIE poll sampled the opinion of 11,534 respondents, and like I said during the first half of this show, that's a huge sample size. And this poll, like I said, goes beyond predicting how each presidential candidate will do, because it looks at issues like vote buying, worries about violence, confidence in INEC, so much more. Before the break, I was having a conversation with SBM Intelligence. I have their head of research on the show with me, Ikemesit Effiong, and he was telling us something interesting about vote buying. He says vote buying is actually more expensive in states where there's competition. Yes, Ikemesit?
Ikemesit? Absolutely.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, yeah, sure. So one of the things, as I was saying before the break, that we found out is that vote buying is competitive in a number of states. So the general profile for vote buying is that, one, if your state is one of the big voting states, if it's one of the big electorates, so you think Lagos, you think Kano, you think Rivers, you think Kaduna, your vote buying profile is in the upper percentile. So the general floor for most Nigerian voters who have been offered monies for their poll is between the 1,000 to 5,000 naira range. But you see the proportion of voters that report that they've been offered more than 5,000 naira, so between the 5,000 to 10,000 naira range, begins to increase when you look at some of the bigger constituencies, right? If your state is one of the swing states, and I don't necessarily use this as sort of the American understanding of the term, but if your state has been won by more than one political party over the last three election cycles, then a greater proportion of voters in those states say they've been offered more than the general sort of 1,000 to 5,000 naira floor, as it were. And so, depending on whether your state is a big state or it's a competitive state, right, during the presidential races, the cost, and this is not necessarily a sentence that I thought of, or use on radio, but the cost of your vote is sort of a lot more valuable. One of the things we saw with the unpublished numbers in terms of what voters would, you know, in air quotes, demand for their votes is that actually, you know, voters generally say within this cycle that they'll be demanding more than, you know, they've traditionally received, right, in the past. I think it was a particular state, which I was not going to mention, where almost half of voters say they would demand for 20,000 naira or more, which is, you know, on the face of it, you know, a very jarring piece of intelligence to swallow to swallow up. But when you think about the economic and the social context within which this particular election is happening, there is, you know, there's a shortage of currency notes, right? Especially the new ones. We're dealing with, you know, certainly the back end, but it still presents, you know, energy crisis. You know, inflation is in the high double digits. Unemployment has been relatively high for the last couple of years. It appears as though there are a modicum of voters who actually are approaching this election as, you know, as an exercise in securing their economic position. We had some voters who clearly told us they know they will see cash on election day and they want cash, right? Just because cash hasn't been available. Mm. So this election might actually see us observe some very interesting vote buying and sort of, you know, vote buying deployment tactics on the ground, we think. At least that's one of the key learnings that we acquired in putting together the study.
Putting together the poll, okay. If you just tuned in, Lagos, you're listening to Hard Facts on Nigeria Info 99.3. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. All right, let's dig into some of the data. Let's start with the presidential election. Unfortunately, we don't have much time, so we're probably not going to be able to get as much out of this as we would like, but we'll see what we can do. So, according to your report, you used 4 questions to make your projections with the presidential election now. So your questions were, who is your preferred candidate? Are you voting for your preferred candidate? Will you vote for the same party in all elections? Who do you think will win the presidency? Why did you use these 4 questions to predict instead of simply who's your preferred candidate, you know? And can you show us a bit of the formula you used to balance all 4?
I don't know about the formula bit, but I'll tell you why we did, why we structured the projections the way we have. Mm-hmm. When we did our first poll unpublished in September, I believe, we only used the preferred candidate question, but we found out that it gave us interesting insights that we didn't think tallied with a lot of sort of the anecdotal things that we were seeing on the ground. So when you ask the average voter who their preferred candidate is, you're really at the heart of it. You're asking them a personal question.
Okay.
And we found out that quite a number of respondents didn't appear comfortable being honest, right?
Okay.
With their responses. So when we did the second poll in December, we decided as a control mechanism, as an analytical control mechanism, to ask voters who they thought would win and who they, you know, and, you know, some of, you know, those other questions. And so we actually find out that when you anonymize the question by then asking respondents who they thought would win, in many cases there was a mismatch between their preferred candidacy and who they actually thought was going to win. And we actually thought and felt, right, when we asked sort of correlating, you know, more confirmatory questions as to why they thought the candidates will win, you know, some people will say the power of incumbency, you know, some people actually answered, but a lot of voters actually answered those questions in a way that betrayed their own preference. And so for us, we thought that it made sense for us to marry the personal question with sort of the more general anonymous question, and the truth may lie somewhere in the middle. We also thought that it was important to ask people whether they were going to vote the same way, right? Whether they were going to vote the same party for the presidential contest as well as for, you know, all of the other down ballot races. So the governorship, the federal legislative, and the state legislative races. And so for us, in states where a majority or a plurality of respondents said they were going to split their votes, then, you know, that was the dynamic that we had to factor into how we structured our projections. But if there was a state where people, a majority of respondents said, okay, they were going to vote the same party across the line, then, you know, that gave us a clear picture as to the level of penetration that a given candidate or a given political party had in that state. And what we found was that in a majority of Nigerian states, just a slight majority, but a majority nonetheless, you had people who were ready to split their votes and vote a different candidate for the presidential contest, or at least that's what they told us.
Yeah, because that's why I'm asking, that's why I was asking that question, because in many states you have, you have a plurality of respondents saying candidate A is their preferred candidate, but your projection is that candidate B will win. That's why I want you to take the time to explain how your predictive model works, since it doesn't just use preferred candidates like a standard poll.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so let's, in a hypothetical situation, say that a majority of candidates in, you know, X states say their preferred candidate is, are we allowed to use any of the candidate names, or do I just use hypothetical?
Yeah, sure. Use the candidate's name. Yeah, sure. Use anyone.
Okay, great. Okay, so let me use the parties, just to be on the safe side. Mm-hmm. So let's say a majority of respondents in a particular state say they prefer the Labour Party candidate.
Okay.
Then on the second question about who they think will win, they say the PDP candidates will win. Mm-hmm. Then we ask them the third question about whether they would vote for the same political party for all of the four contests that are up for grabs between, you know, the end of February and the middle of March. Let's say a majority say they will split their vote. So basically, they will vote one party in the presidential contest and other parties, right, for the down ballot. And then we ask them a fourth question, right, as to whether they will vote for their preferred party, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the presidential contest. And let's say they say they will vote their party. What that tells us on the face of it, and this is sort of how we structure the model, is that one, there is a lot of dissatisfaction with, you know, the party that people say is likely to win, right? So oftentimes our respondents say the party that is likely to win is one of the establishment parties, either the PDP or the APC. And in many cases, they state that their preferred candidate is, all of the parties have representation on the preferred candidate pool. But to stick with our hypothetical now, it appears as though many traditional, you know, PDP voters in this particular hypothetical may be considering or may have evinced a preference, right, for the Labour Party candidates. Now, on top of those four questions, we had add an extra layer, which is voting history. And we can't really ignore voting history, because the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior, right? And so we actually look at the voting history. And so if in this hypothetical state, within the last three election cycles, the state has chosen multiple parties. So say it's an APC state in this cycle, but in the last two cycles, it voted PDP. So that simply tells us that, you know, there is not only general dissatisfaction with sort of the party that people would ordinarily have gravitated to it. This was a traditional two-horse race cycle, but that there's also a lot of dissatisfaction with the party that currently, you know, manages and is in charge of that state. And so what the model does is that the model sort of finds a middle ground. So we then look at the share of the preferred candidate pool. If the share of the preferred candidate pool is higher than 60-65% in favor of one party, then we look at the preferred candidate share of all of the others. But more importantly, we look at the supposed undecided portion of the preferred candidate's pool. If the share of the undecided portion is not enough, if it's shared amongst all of the other parties, apart from the clear winner on the preferred candidate's pool, if the undecided pool does not flip the dynamics in favor of any of the other parties, then we feel more confident in calling that state for the preferred candidates, right? So the model has a lot of moving parts and, you know, a lot of the debate that has gone on, right, you know, especially on social media, as to how realistic or otherwise our projections have been, has circled around that. But the most important thing to understand is we asked Nigerians who they preferred. We asked Nigerians who they thought would win. We asked Nigerians if they would actually pack their votes for their preferred candidates. And in some states, there are many people who said, well, they are not sure, right? So we look at the unsure share of that particular question. And again, if that unsure share is so large that if we transferred it to the preferred candidate pool, it changes the dynamics, then we'd begin to, then that tells us that maybe the respondents in those states were just not comfortable telling us who they really would vote for. Okay. Right. And so would the, Do I stop there or do I just finish up? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Yeah. So then we recalibrate our assessment of the preferred candidates poll, and then we'll probably add more weighting in the construction of the model to the actual win share. So, you know, we then look at the aspects of the sample size where people actually answer the question about who they actually thought or who they actually think will win, right? So the model, you know, is sort of a moving, right, and a sliding scale. And then it's further complicated by the fact that we have the 25% requirement, right, constitutionally. So typically, if any of the candidates gets above the 25% share on both the preferred candidate question and also on the likelihood to win question, we typically call the state, right, for the candidates on the 25% model. And that happened enough times for the PDP and for the Labour Party candidates in enough states that we projected that they would get the spread, right, unlike the APC candidates. When it came to the wins, that's when things, you know, became, you know, even more complicated. And then we had to add the extra level, you know, around voting history. But it's quite interesting that the presence of a third party candidate has upended traditional voting patterns. It has also upended our initial assessments about turnouts. And so what we've seen is that the number of respondents who, and we have historical data to benchmark this on, but the number of respondents who say they will turn out to vote, right, you know, correlates very closely with their likelihood to vote for the third party candidate. And so, you know, in many of the states where we have projected that the Labour Party candidates, right, would do well, we're seeing people say that they will come out to vote at rates that we haven't seen, certainly in the last two election cycles, right, as it were. So whichever way you splice it, and I know that, you know, Sandra will be doing a lot of this on election day, right? The patterns are just, you know, they are not only very interesting, but in many cases, we are in new ground, right, from an electoral data standpoint. And I think this particular election will surprise and upend a lot of our assumptions about how Nigerians vote.
All right. So we've got about 2 minutes, but I have a question here from Yemi in Ayobo. Yemi says, can your guests provide some details about the response measurement system analysis for this study? How sensitive? Secondly, how significant is the sample size of over 11,000 relative to the population size of over 90 million voters? My worry is the power of study power is small on account of the sample size, that is possibly less than 70%. How can we on this basis rely on the outcome of this SB of this survey? Okay, is that a question that you can take on in 1 minute? Because we've got 1 minute left.
Yeah, okay. So my big top line answer would be that, you know, polls are not prophecies, right? Polls are indicative of shifting trends. They are indicative of where the headspace of the Nigerian, where the headspace of the representative population that you're sampling is at a given point in time. I think that a lot of our listeners and our viewers and a lot of Nigerians in general that are politically plugged in need to make margin for the fact that polls in themselves can disrupt the environment such that people then act in ways that the poll originally said that they might not act in, right? Just think of this as indicative of where Nigerians or how Nigerians viewed the issues at the time we went to the field. And I think our cutoff date was the 3rd of February, right, of this year.
But all of this could change now that the polls are out, and this could cause some sort of change that we haven't accounted for yet, yes?
Precisely, because humans respond to stimuli.
All right. Thank you so much, Ikemi Sedefiong, for joining us on the show. He's the head of research at SBM Intelligence. They just came out with this poll that sampled the opinions of 11,534 respondents. And the poll shows quite a number of things. So first, I wish we had time to get into it, but I have a few seconds before I have to take a break and then bring you the news at 6 o'clock. But thank you to SBM. We will hopefully come back to SBM to talk a bit more about this poll. We're definitely also covering elections with SBM. So this poll will come up quite a bit in the middle of the coverage. Ikemi, thanks for your time. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, Lagos. Don't go away. The news is up next.